إِنَّ رَبَّكُمُ اللَّهُ الَّذِي خَلَقَ السَّمَاوَاتِ وَالْأَرْضَ فِي سِتَّةِ أَيَّامٍ ثُمَّ اسْتَوَى عَلَى الْعَرْشِ يُغْشِي اللَّيْلَ النَّهَارَ يَطْلُبُهُ حَثِيثًا وَالشَّمْسَ وَالْقَمَرَ وَالنُّجُومَ مُسَخَّرَاتٍ بِأَمْرِهِ أَلَا لَهُ الْخَلْقُ وَالْأَمْرُ تَبَارَكَ اللَّهُ رَبُّ الْعَالَمِينَ.
Surely, your Lord is none other than Allah, who created the heavens and the earth in 6 days, and then ascended His throne, who causes the night to cover the day, and then the day swiftly pursues the night, who created the sun and the moon and the stars, making them all subservient to His command. Lo, His is the creation, and His is the command. Blessed is Allah, the Lord of the whole universe, who created the heavens and the earth in 6 days. The word day in the above verse has been used either in the usual sense of the 24-hour unit of time or in a more general sense of period of time, such as in the following verses of the Quran. Verily, a day in the sight of your Lord is like 1,000 years of your reckoning. Al-Hajj 22:47. The angels and the spirit ascend unto him on a day, the measure of which is 50,000 years. Al-Miraj 70:4. For further explanation, see Fusilat 41, notes 12 to 15.
And then ascended his throne.
It is quite difficult to appreciate fully the exact nature of the Quranic statement, Allah ascended the throne. One possibility is that after the creation of the universe, God focused His effulgence on a particular point in His kingdom, which is known as the throne, from where He showers the blessings of life and power and governs the whole universe. It is possible that the word throne stands for dominion and authority, and that God's ascending the throne signifies His actual taking over the reins of the universe after having created it. Whatever the exact meaning of the expression, Allah ascended the throne, the main thrust of the verse is, God is not just the creator of the universe, but is also its sovereign and ruler, that after creating the universe, He did not detach Himself from, nor become indifferent to, His creation. On the contrary, He effectively rules over the universe as a whole, as well as every part of it. All power and sovereignty rest with Him. Everything in the universe is fully in His grasp and is subservient to His will. Every atom is bound in obedience to Him. The fate of everything existent is in His hands. Thus, the Quran undermines the very basis of the misconception which leads man at times to polytheism, at others to self-glorification, and so to rebellion against God. This is the natural corollary of considering God divorced from the affairs of the universe. In such cases, there are two possibilities. One, that beings other than God are considered to have the power to make or mar man's destiny. Here, man is bound to turn to those beings in devotion and subservience. The second possibility is for man to consider himself as the master of his own destiny. Here, man considers himself independent of and indifferent to any higher being. It is significant that the words and figures of speech employed by the Quran to denote the relationship between God and man are closely related to kingship, dominion, and sovereignty. This is too conspicuous a fact to be missed by any careful student of the Quran. It is strange, however, that it has led some superficial critics and persons of biased outlook to conclude that the Quran reflects the milieu in which man's outlook was dominated by monarchical concepts, and that therefore its author, who in their view was the Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, presented God as a sovereign ruler, an absolute monarch. Quite contrary to this is the fundamental truth which the Quran emphatically affirms, God's sovereignty over the heavens and the earth. It negates with equal emphasis that sovereignty belongs to anyone else. Such a doctrine demolishes the very assumption on the basis of which the above erroneous conclusion was derived. The Quran concept of God's sovereignty is in sharp contrast to the idea that creatures of God may lay claim to sovereignty and kingship. In contrast to the weak, mortal kings of the world, God is eternal and all-powerful. This undermines the very basis of the misconceived criticism that Islam has a monarchical basis, since no human being can conform to the Islamic description of the sovereign. All sovereignty vests in the one true God. Hence, all those who claim total or partial sovereignty, either for any person or group of people, are merely cherishing an illusion. It is evident, therefore, that it is totally inappropriate for man, who is a part of the universe created and governed by God, to adopt any other attitude than that of acknowledging God as the only object of worship and as the only sovereign in a societal and political sense.
Lo, His is the creation, and His is the command.
This is an elaboration of the idea propounded in the note immediately above, explaining the meaning of God's ascension to the throne. To reiterate, God is not merely the sole creator, but also the one who commands and governs. He has not detached himself from his creation, leaving it to the care of others who might rule over it as they please. Nor has he granted independence to his creation or any part of it so that they might function as they wish. On the contrary, his grip over the entire universe is very firm. He rules over it according to his sovereign will. If we find alternation taking place between day and night, it is a result of God's command. God has full power both to hold that process in abeyance or to alter the very system which causes the alternation. The heavenly bodies, the sun, the moon, and the stars are all absolutely powerless. They are totally subservient to God's overpowering will and have been yoked to function according to His command.
Blessed is Allah.
The word barakah signifies growth and increase. The notions of elevation and greatness, as well as of permanence and stability, are also an essential part of the word's meaning. Besides these, the word inalienably carries nuances of goodness and beneficence. To say that God is full of barakah means that His goodness knows no bounds, that endless beneficence emanates from Him, that He is the exalted One whose loftiness knows no end, that His beneficence and loftiness are permanent, and thus they will never vanish or suffer decline.
ادعوا ربكم تضرعا وخفية إنه لا يحب المعتدين.
Call upon your Lord with humility and in secret. Surely, He does not love the transgressors.
ولا تفسدوا في الأرض بعد إصلاحها وادعوه خوفا وطمعا إن رحمة الله قريب من المحسنين.
And do not make mischief in the earth after it has been set in order, and call upon Him with fear and longing. Surely, Allah's mercy is close to those who do good. And do not make mischief in the earth after it has been set in order.
The command not to make mischief in the earth means not to vitiate the right order of life. What basically constitutes mischief-making is to surrender oneself to one's lusts, to commit acts in subservience to other human beings, and to subscribe to base morals, social orders, civilizations, principles, and laws derived from sources other than God's guidance. This is the essential mischief from which innumerable evils issue and which the Quran seeks to eradicate. The Quran also emphasizes that sound order is the original condition, and disorder and mischief occurred later as accidents resulting from man's ignorance and transgression. In other words, man's life on earth did not start with ignorance, savagery, polytheistic beliefs, rebellion against God, and moral disorder, whereafter reforms were gradually introduced. On the contrary, man's life began with good order and was later corrupted because of man's perversity and folly. God sent prophets from time to time in order to eradicate the disorder that had set in and to restore the original good order. These prophets constantly exhorted people to refrain from disrupting the original order and creating mischief. Thus, the Quranic view on this question is altogether different from that of the proponents of the false doctrine of evolution, who postulate that man has gradually come out of darkness into light, that life has advanced in a unilinear fashion towards increasingly better conditions. The Quran rather postulates that human life began in the full light of divine guidance, that the original state of affairs was in accord with the right way prescribed by God. The blame for corruption goes to man, who, falling victim to Satan's allurements, veered towards darkness and corrupted the right order of human life again and again. As for God, He continually sent prophets in order to summon men from darkness to light, and ask them to eschew evil and wickedness,
and call upon Him with fear and longing.
This clearly shows what the expression mischief-making in the verse signifies. It consists of man's turning to others, then God, as his guardian, patron, and helper, and calling them to his aid and support. To bring about reform, therefore, consists of man's turning exclusively to God as his guardian and helper. Calling upon Allah with fear and longing conveys the idea that man should fear God alone, and to Him alone he should look for the fulfillment of his wishes. While calling upon God, man should realize that he is totally dependent on God's favor, and that he can attain success only if God helps and guides him to it. Similarly, man should also bear in mind that once he is deprived of God's support, he is doomed to utter failure and undoing.
وَهُوَ الَّذِي يُرْسِلُ الرِّيَاحَ بُشْرًا بَيْنَ يَدَيْ رَحْمَتِهِ حَتَّى إِذَا أَقَلَّتْ سَحَابًا ثِقَالًا سُقْنَاهُ لِبَلَدٍ مَيِّتٍ فَأَنزَلْنَا بِهِ الْمَاءَ فَأَخْرَجْنَا بِهِ مِنْ كُلِّ الثَّمَرَاتِ كَذَلِكَ نُخْرِجُ الْمَوْتَى لَعَلَّكُمْ تَذَكَّرُونَ
And it is He who sends forth winds as glad tidings in advance of His mercy. And when they have carried a heavy laden cloud, we drive it to a dead land. Then we send down rain from it and bring forth therewith fruits of every kind. In this manner do we raise the dead, that you may take heed.
والبلد الطيب يخرج نباته بإذن ربه والذي خبث لا يخرج إلا نكدا كذلك نصرف الآيات لقوم يشكرون
As for the good land, vegetation comes forth in abundance by the command of its Lord, whereas from the bad land, only poor vegetation comes forth. Thus do we expound our signs in diverse ways for a people who are grateful.
Whereas from the bad land, only poor vegetation comes forth.
It is necessary to grasp the subtle point made here in order to appreciate the full purport of what is being said. The reference to rain and its advantages is intended to bring into focus God's power and to affirm life after death.
Moreover, it is also intended to draw attention in allegorical, albeit graphic terms, to the blessings of prophethood and how it helps men to distinguish between good and evil, between pure and impure.
The intimation of divine guidance through the prophets is compared to the movement of winds, the appearance of rain-laden clouds, and the fall of life-sustaining raindrops. In the same way as rainfall causes dead earth to be revived and makes the hidden treasures of life burst forth from its womb, so the impact of the teachings of the prophets also brings dead humanity back to life, causing the hidden goodness in men to burst forth. This allegory also hints at another important fact. In the same way that only fertile soil profits from rainfall, so only men of a righteous nature can profit from the blessings of prophethood. As for the wicked, they are like wasteland. Rainfall can cause such a land to bring forth only thorny bushes and cacti. Similarly, when the wicked come into contact with the teaching of the prophets, the hidden evils of their nature come into full play. This allegory is followed by a well-sustained account with illustrations from history, showing that whenever the prophets preach their message, men split into two camps. The righteous receive the blessings of prophethood and flourish, bringing forth the fruit of their goodness, As for the wicked, once the criterion provided by the prophets is applied, their impurities are fully exposed. This enables human society to purge itself of impurities in the same way as the goldsmith purges precious metals of alloy.